IVM.
Hi, I'm Utsav, a behavior researcher by training and a slow traveler by passion. Postcards from Nowhere is a travel podcast where I condense a decade of travel experiences and explore not just the where, but also the why and how to travel. My stories emerge from slow traveling the less explored parts of the world: Bosnia and Herzegovina, Armenia, Uzbekistan, and even China. At the end of each story, I give practical tips and new ideas about how to travel better. This week, we take a trip down history and uncover the social history of tea and the psychological and poetic effects of this universally loved beverage. Do ghoont chai pi aur sair duniya ki, dekho main karke aa gaya, aa gaya, aa gaya. In 1961, the Hindi film Sanjog, starring two lesser-known actors, Pradeep Kumar and Anita Guha, was released. The film did not exactly set the box office on fire, but even before that, it was under fire by the censor board. The lyrics you just heard, Do ghoont chai pi, were actually the modified lyrics. The original lyrics was Do ghoont maine pi, which the censor board felt alluded to alcohol and could potentially encourage drinking in India. So the filmmakers reshot the video of the song with a chai version. But the audio of the song continued to have the original Do ghoont maine pi because the censor board somehow felt that the audio alone would not encourage people to drink. But in the logic-defying ways in which only India's censor board can operate, they definitely missed out on the addictive nature of tea itself, because it certainly has pharmacological and mind-changing qualities. But it's the social history of tea which is even more fascinating. I did an episode on the history of tea in India. Go check out episode 24, Chai, Colonizing the Colonizers. But this episode goes back even further. This is the story of how tea went from being a luxury good to an object of mass desire to a ubiquitous feature of daily life. Tea originated in China, more specifically in Southwest China and Tibet. One of the origin stories go that an emperor was drinking a bowl of hot water in a garden. Leaves from a tea plant fell into it accidentally, yielding a pleasant tannic flavor. Whatever its origins, it was a popular drink in China, both as a medicine and a social beverage. It sometimes even came to be used as money. Tea spread across the world in two distinct routes. The first came via the Silk Route. It came to Japan in bags of Buddhist priests, traveling along the path of Buddhism itself. In India, it was brought by the British, who were looking for a new market for Chinese tea. It began when a Scottish botanist named Robert Fortune, who disguised himself as a Chinese nobleman and entered the Wuxishan Hill region on a mission for the East India Company. He stole seeds and plants, but just as importantly, he was able to visit Chinese tea processing workshops and learn the methods by which leaves were sorted, dried, fired, and rolled. He learned that green and black teas actually came from the same plant, though they were processed quite differently. The seeds and plants he smuggled became nursery stock back in India. By the mid-19th century, Darjeeling and Assam were household names in Britain. For the East India Company, Indian tea was crucial since it could be exported without paying the excise taxes levied on Chinese tea. In Britain itself, tea became cheap enough for most people and cheaper even than beer for poor labourers with unreliable incomes. It was promoted as an alternative to gin, often thought of as the cause of public drunkenness and ruined lives. In that sense, the Indian Censor Board found a kindred spirit in the British, which may be unsurprising given how many colonial and Victorian ideas we unquestioningly accepted as our own. But the real change in attitudes of tea came about when in 1830s there began a concerted campaign to unite families over tea. Alcohol kept men away from homes and taverns and other all-male social places, but tea could be drunk by anyone. As British society was being changed by the Industrial Revolution, the rhythm of people's lives changed, especially those of factory workers. Homes became the spaces of solace and support, away from the dearth and danger of industry, and tea became the beverage of domesticity. In factories, managers increasingly measured workers' productivity, and tea and the sugar that sweetened it became ideal sources of energy. In 1862, a painting by Thomas Webster titled A Tea Party showed an afternoon tea service in a working-class English household. The children sit on the floor and are absorbed in their own meticulous replication of the party many adults would have enjoyed. One child holds a doll, as if she were educating a new generation in the finer points of tea etiquette. The mid-19th century English home set its schedule around tea. Tea time came at the end of the workday, providing rest from labor both outside and inside the house. In many homes, it also came to be seen as a light meal. Cut to today, not much seems to have changed. Indians are known to find any excuse to have chai. It's a social act. Brewing is often ritualized. Chai is a convener, a social stimulant leading to conversation and shared time. Think about the time you first had chai. Just the act of being able to drink chai was a mark of adulthood. As you graduated from milk, a drink of nutrition, to chai, a drink of stimulation. The act of making chai was yet another step in the ladder of adulthood. Someone who made good tea was definitely someone who could be relied on in the kitchen and in life. Even today, people engrossed in work will take a break around 4 p.m. for a cutting chai, if not a leisurely one. And much like mid-19th century Britain, tea at the end of the workday is so looked forward to that on a bad day, the anticipation of the event keeps you going. Even by accident, I cannot overstate the role of tea in India. For tea is also seen as a vehicle of expressing hospitality and kindness. The very act of chai poochna is an inherently desi trait. As we trace histories of the foods we consume, we often forget their social histories. Rather than merely being markers of culture, they can be intensely psychological and poetic experiences. So for all you chai lovers out there, I am going to leave you with the thoughts of the 9th century Chinese poet Lu Tong as he describes the effect of chai. The first bowl sleekly moistened throat and lips. The second banished all my loneliness. The third expelled the fullness from my mind, sharpening inspiration gained from all the books I've read. The fourth brought forth light perspiration, dispersing a lifetime's troubles through my pores. The fifth bowl cleansed every atom of my being. The sixth made me kin to the immortals. The seventh, I can take no more.
If you like this podcast, don't forget to check out other interesting podcasts on the IBM network. You can listen to us on the IBM Podcast app or ibmpodcast.com. You can also follow us on our social media. We are at IBM Podcasts on Twitter and Instagram. If you want to reach out to me, I am Utsav Memory on Twitter and YVChavel42 on Instagram.